everyone, and welcome to this episode of Dogs Unknown. I'm Sarah Frazier, joined by fellow host Brian Burton. We have some very fun and engaging guests on today. And what we're talking about is maybe a little bit taboo, even to say out loud. The episode title is I Don't Like My Dog. And when we get a dog, I think it's generally expected that we're just going to fall madly in love with them and we're going to experience this just totally instant one-of-a-kind connection with them. And that's not always the case. So what happens if you and your dog just don't mesh? Like, how do you form a positive relationship with a dog who you truthfully just don't like very much? So we are joined today by Dr. Chris Pockel, who's a board-certified veterinary behaviorist. He is VP of Veterinary Behavior here at Instinct, owner of the Animal Behavior Clinic in Portland, and co-owner of Instinct Portland, and lectures all over the place on animal behavior topics.
Literally all over the place.
All the time, all over the place. Yes, but he's at home today.
I am at home. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for agreeing to have it with us. Also on the guest list today, we have Lauren Jones-Wenzel, who is a certified dog behavior consultant and certified trainer at Instinct Northern New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we have Ayelet Berger, who is a certified dog behavior consultant as well, and also co-owner of Instinct Nashville. So thank you everyone for being here and discussing what feels, again, like I said, a little bit like kind of a taboo topic, but one that I'm sure at least a portion of our listeners have experienced at some point over the course of their dog owning lives. So with that being said, opening this up to the group, how common do we feel like this scenario is? Like, how often we may have a skewed perception because we all deal with clients who are working through some pretty significant behavior issues. And so, you know, we might run into this more often, but how common is this scenario? Do you run into a clients? Have you ever run into it with clients?
I definitely
don't name
have.
Them.
Yes.
I was going to say not that often. I mean, I feel like many clients will come in explaining to us that there's something about the dog's behavior they don't like, but they don't often frame it as, I don't like the dog. I don't like what this dog is doing or not doing, but they don't always say, I don't like my dog. And maybe that's because they feel like it's not okay to say that, but yeah.
Yeah, I've a few times, and it's typically the person who has not agreed to said dog joining the family and somehow got saddled with most of the responsibility. Mm. I'm there only dealing with that person. And they're like, I didn't want this dog, but now they're here and I have to take care of them. So what do I do? I'm like, well, this is going well. But it's, you know, it does happen sometimes.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that it probably happens more often than we're aware of. Because as you said, Laura, and I just wonder, right? It doesn't seem like that thing that you lead out with, like, hey, I'm here to spend a lot of money on this dog, or even a little bit of money. I'm curious about what we could do, but I don't like them very much, right? There's sort of a difference in that sort of motivational state. I will say that in comparison to what I do now on the behavior side of things, I would say that my impression is that I experienced this more when I was a general practitioner. And sometimes it would come up as sort of an obstacle to treatment where I might say, hey, here's all the things that I've identified. You know, we've got these allergy issues, or maybe there's this GI thing going on. And you get a client who's like, yeah, I hear that. And also, I don't know that that's necessarily what I want to do. Right. So maybe at a time when we're proposing something as far as treatment or intervention that isn't exactly what they were looking for from that experience, and we may see some of that lack of bond or even dislike that comes through as a kind of an unspoken obstacle. And, you know, the tricky thing with unspoken obstacles is that we can't really navigate it or really create some solutions if we don't know that it exists. So I wonder if it's sort of lurking underneath more often than we realize.
Yeah, I would think that that's the case because again, it's just even a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
We just have these expectations that our dogs are going to be like these lovely, wonderful beings in our lives, and they often are. And it's just such an important, we put that relationship on such a pedestal, I think, like the dog human connection and relationship. And if it's not there, I feel like someone might even just have a hard time admitting that to themselves.
I like the way you said that, Sarah. And from the standpoint of, you know, I think we can look at this from a couple different angles, right? Like we could look at it, the dog, I don't like you. But if a client is even starting to recognize that, I think a lot of our clients may have that, the kind of the next step of, oh my God, what does that say about me? Mm-hmm. Like if I am looking at this dog and whether I acknowledge that they're struggling or having a challenging time or misbehaving or whatever label we put on that, but me as a dog owner, me as a pet owner, if I can't find a way to at least like you, oh my gosh, like that has the potential to really go down sort of the shame, guilt spiral, I think for potentially a lot of our clients. I don't know that, but I wonder whether that would be a factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. Brian, I don't know if you have any additional thoughts on that before we get into some of the reasons people might find themselves in this situation.
No, I don't have.
Okay.
I think people touched, and I'm waiting to get into the reasons why, because I do have thoughts there.
So I think I would love to move into what are some of the reasons why people might find themselves feeling this way. But before we do, I do just want to reiterate that if you feel that way, doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you as a dog owner. Dogs are individuals. We are individuals. It's a complex relationship. Right. If you find yourself feeling that way, don't go down the guilt, shame, I'm an awful person spiral, because I'm quite certain that's not the case. It's also probably not the case that your dog is just an icky dog. Right. Like there's probably lots there for you to connect with them over. And we'll talk about that later in the episode as well. But if you're feeling that way, you know, don't feel bad about it. It's nice to acknowledge it, because then you can get into like, hey, why do I feel this way? And what might be some ways to build that relationship and move in a more positive direction.
Yeah. And I would just add to that I think when I think about the cases where this has come up, I don't think I can think of one case where the owner didn't care, mm-hmm. you know, or didn't care about the dog or what the outcome was going to be and whether that means the dog was going to stay there or not. Mm-hmm. Every person really cared about it. And I think what I'm grateful for is when clients actually share that with us. I think that's, and if you're working with someone in a professional capacity, really, I shouldn't use the word should, but they really should be open to like having that conversation with you. So if you're getting sort of judgy, shamey vibes, then you might need to talk to someone else. But I just want to make sure people know that. And the people who have been in those situations, they all really cared about the dog. So mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, I just wanted to put that out there, especially people listening to this who might be in that boat.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So
Brian,
what comes to mind? Oh, sorry, Lauren, okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say something with what Brian said, because I think that's really important to say, because especially I find this to be true many times of owners who have rescued a dog and there's really serious behavior things going on and they really like dig those heels in about, I'm not quitting, I'm not giving up. And there's times where I think it's important for owners to understand that giving up, quote unquote, isn't the same thing as recognizing that a dog is unsafe in your home or unsafe with your children, or that potentially that your ability to meet that dog's needs is really limited and that maybe it's not a good fit, or that the dog's quality of life could be better in a different environment. And that's not quitting or giving up. And I actually think in many ways you are then advocating for the dog even more by recognizing it's not about me and that maybe I need to look for a better environment, or I need to recognize I'm putting people at risk and this dog may be unsafe for whatever reason, or just unsafe in my situation. And I need to do something to solve that. And that's not the same thing as being like, oh, well, I just don't feel like doing the work, or, oh, I'm just going to give up, because that's not the same. And a lot of owners I've encountered have struggled with that, and they kind of need someone to tell them like, you're not a bad person for realizing that this isn't okay or this isn't going to work.
Yeah,
certainly. And Lauren, I feel like we may circle back to that when we get into sort of the what do we do about it section, you know, because that may be a conversation depending on what's going on for reasons beyond as something as quote unquote simple as I don't like my dog.
Right.
Right. But yeah, like what come to mind for you all in your personal experience of reasons why people might find themselves disliking their dog or resenting their dog or sort of having negative feelings toward them? I have some, but I would love to hear from others.
I'm going to say one, and then I'll just turn it over because we can get a little round robin going here on this one. I think lack of understanding is probably at the top of my list. And I know there's a lot of different ways that could show up, but just a lack of understanding of a failure to recognize body language or a failure to understand breed specific needs or age development factors, but lack of understanding. And so we're sort of encountering this conflict between, I thought it was going to go one way, but it's not. And the reason I sort of lead out with that is, without going too far into the solutions piece, that's something that if we can address that through education, you know, it's one of those things where we may have a client who goes, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And it looks completely different in the blink of an eye by creating a different perspective. So understanding seems like a big one for me.
And is that, like, Dr. Pockle, do you think that comes down to maybe a mismatch in expectations versus reality because of that lack of understanding, or is it something more than that? Like, does it lead to them misinterpreting behavior, or does it?
I think any and all of those things, yeah. Right? Where, you know, especially if we've got an owner who is either sort of looking at that animal through a lens of previous dog, mm-hmm. or maybe they've got a different experience in terms of their training history. And so an animal who's struggling to regulate big feelings looks like they're quote unquote disobedient and they're not responding to training or something along those lines, where mm-hmm. simply filling in the blank of what's actually going on as best we can tell may be enough to reset and kind of reground that client in actually what is happening versus the story that we've created about that dog that may be contributing to some of that conflict.
Yeah. And Brian, I know you were about to raise one as well.
Yeah. I think one of the ones where I see it, and I agree with everything Chris just said, could definitely see that. The other place where I've seen it is, it's like a mismatch in what the dog needs in terms of like activities or lifestyle versus the owner. So there's like a really big mismatch in terms, like, let's say there's someone who likes to go hiking and going to the farmer's market and going to dog beaches. And like the dog is almost seen as a, I don't know if like a conduit for their social life is like the right term, but like they, maybe with like a previous dog, it's like their dog and like social activities that they want to do, it sort of creates this social network that they're looking for. And so some of those dogs are just really not appropriate to be in all of those situations. And it might mean, you know, the types of activities that the dog likes or can do is going to be different than what the owner sort of likes or wants to do. And I do find sometimes that mismatch can definitely cause this problem. And that can be a little hard because, like, there is sort of a mind shift that has to happen there in terms of, what activities does my dog actually enjoy? And that could be different than the stuff that you like to enjoy. And it doesn't mean you can't do those other activities. It just means maybe your dog can't do all of those activities with you. And I do find that really hard for some owners. And I get it. Like, even with, you know, some of our dogs in the past, stuff that I like to do that some of them can't do. And it's a little frustrating, but I do find that in particular can be really challenging.
And I would guess that is a more common outcome when that mismatch is there. If a large part of how someone views their relationship with the dog, or potentially the reason that they're getting a dog, is as an activity partner.
Yes.
Versus potentially as a friend or as a snuggle buddy or as a, you know, whatever it might be. But if you're getting a dog assuming they're going to be an activity partner mm-hmm. with you, and that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's maybe how you were expecting to bond and build that relationship, and you're not able to do it in the way that is most comfortable
right.
for you. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a big one. Lauren, how about you? What comes to mind?
Two things actually came to mind for me. So one is definitely when owners are dealing with really difficult behaviors, and the one that springs to mind is separation anxiety. I think there can also be, the owner's committed to doing what the dog needs, but there's almost resentment that, like, I'm trapped in my house. Like, I can't go do anything mm-hmm. because I can't leave the dog alone, and there's limited resources. And that is incredibly stressful. It's very like those some of those behaviors where it's not that the owner doesn't want to accommodate the dog, or even like they may understand the nature of the problem behavior, but the living with it and the trying to work through it is just exhausting and very, very hard. And I think that can build, you know, over time, build more damage into the relationship because of it. The other one that I've personally seen with a longtime client of mine was sort of getting a new dog after having a series of dogs of a particular breed. So I had a client that had worked with Belgian Terves for, had many of them, loved them, had great, you know, really good, solid dogs that they could do things with and that were responsive. And then they adopted a red tick coonhound. That was just a whole nother,
ball of dear.
And I feel
I'm not laughing at your client. I'm just more laughing at the
contrast.
The contrast.
Oh, it was so, and it was, and they, and initially they sort of laughed too, but it did, it started, it just was one of those things where it's not that they were expecting it to not be different, but the reality of, well, this relating to this dog is totally different. Like this dog's way of being is totally different. And it's like intellectually we know it, but it made them feel that the dog didn't like them. And that I think was like emotionally was, especially after having dogs who were so like, I hang on your every word and I want to do all the things that you want to do. And having this dog who was like, hey, you know, it was like, it was a lot harder. And they did eventually.
I'll be sure to yell at the top of my lungs. Yeah. Like, I'll be sure to yell at the top of my lungs to let you know when I've spotted something in the backyard, but otherwise we're good.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's, well, and I like that one as well, because I do think it also touches on the reality that we do have certain just individual preferences when it comes to like temperament and personality. And it would be silly to say it's not okay to have those, you know? And I think there's ways when we get into sort of solutions mode that you can still build a relationship and a really positive one with a dog who maybe doesn't fit that profile. But at first it's a understandable challenge. Oof, you're not what I'm typically drawn towards when I think of like a relationship. Cause we do that with, it would be silly to say with humans, like, oh, I love everyone I meet and I love every sort of characteristic about every person. Like, no, we have preferences and we choose our friends that way and we spend time with those people accordingly. You know, so if we find ourselves in that situation with a dog, we're like, oof, you know, this isn't really the social relationship I was planning on. There's an adjustment period there.
Yeah. And well, it's kind of like even one of, like, I think recently we had a social media clip sort of about the type of relationship that your dog is looking for. And we talked about, you know, some dogs sort of look for more parent type relationship. Some kind of seek out more like a skipper, kind of keeping things. And then some sort of seek out the cool older cousin. And I kind of feel like the coonhound seeks out like the cool older cousin versus the Terve. So I like, you know, just to speak about your, that relate, like that's very real in terms of like, and again, we're generalizing breeds and all the caveats that go with that. But in general, like, yeah, certain breeds are tend to going to have seek out a different type of relationship, and it's special in its own way, but it can be quite jarring or unfamiliar if you don't have that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I love both of those, Lauren, and definitely that matches my experience as well. Ayelette, how about you? Are there others on the list?
Yeah. One that comes to mind is when there's a feeling that the dog has betrayed one of the people in the home with a bite. And, you know, a situation I've seen a few times that relates to that is one partner had the dog as a solo person and then got married or, you know, moved in with their partner. And that dog's bond with their original person is so strong, and the bites are only happening to the new person in this dog's life. And so they're, and even if they're both being bitten, the love story between the dog and the person is so wildly different if they've had them since they were a puppy or they've had all of these beautiful memories. And then when we mix like a baby into it, and, you know, in this one specific family, it's the dad had the dog as a single guy, got married, had a family. And the mom was seeing the dog bite the dad actually, but was like, this is very concerning. We have a baby now. And the dad's like, but I'm okay. right? But the mom had this real, the mom no longer had a relationship with the dog that was positive in any way. And she came, her goal was to get permission to rehome the dog. That was her goal for our session, so that her husband could hear that. And so, yeah, I think that there is this feeling of betrayal sometimes between people and their dogs.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think sometimes that can be a result of just aggression directed at the owner themselves, right? Like that feels like such an affront, and it's so such a hard thing sometimes when you're putting all this effort into care and relationship and your own dog is biting you and you're like, ugh. You know, really, like I can't sit down on my couch the way I want to, or I can, you know, like that's hard.
Very hard.
For those feelings not to build and for that to just turn into, I don't like this being in my home. And I hear you. I think the other one that comes to mind for me as well is if the dog is displaying aggression towards sort of vulnerable members of the home, like if they're going after another dog in the home, or if they're going after, you know, a cat in the home or a child, I think very quickly that attachment can just sever because you're viewing them as like, you know, or a bully or an aggressor or someone who's like putting other loved members of your family in danger.
Yeah.
And so that can really take a quick toll on a relationship, I think. One of the other ones that I know, like Dr. Puckle, I think you mentioned just briefly sort of in passing in your initial answer, but that I think is a really big one is when folks get the dog right after that real heart dog. Like the dog that was just your soulmate that you had this, you did have that magic connection with. And then you might get the dog after that. And you're sort of looking for a replacement of that feeling. And you're looking for a way to bring that dog back into your life. And all you can see is all the ways that this new dog is not your old dog.
Yeah.
And I think that can be really hard sometimes. Yeah. And you sort of put it on them that like it's their fault that they're not your old dog. You don't mean to. I mean, you aren't doing that cognitively, but I do think it happens. And that one, that's a hard one for people. I think the good thing is mostly what I've seen in that situation is that's more just a function of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
You know, and of maybe finishing the grieving process or getting further along in the grieving process and really getting to know your new dog. And we'll talk about that in solutions mode, but I think that's another one.
Yeah. Any others out there?
Yeah, I have one that came to mind when Ayala, when you were talking about sort of the relationship and kind of that trust violation and that, you know, it got me thinking about the relationship between a pet owner and the dog itself. I've had a couple of cases, maybe this one may be a bit less common, but I think I've seen it at least as well, where the dog is, gosh, if anything, a reflection of some of the conflict that exists elsewhere within the house. Mm-hmm. So I may have, you know, multiple family members, whether that's a couple, married or otherwise, and something along the lines where one owner comes in with sort of with one view of what we quote unquote should be doing, and another owner has a very different viewpoint on that. You know, I'm recalling one case where an owner came in basically, you know, with an educational background in special needs and an awareness of medication, and was basically like, give me the meds. Like, we are not moving forward without meds. And the other owner, who was an engineer who had never actually witnessed any of the aggressive episodes between the dog, was violently opposed. And I don't use that word lightly, but was very adamant that medication was not a part of this process. And so every time any one of us looked at the dog, it was almost just immediately reflected back with the fact that they were not on the same page, and we could not initially at least reach any level of cohesive understanding. And so the dog just sort of sitting in the room was essentially acting as a mirror to all of the stuff that truthfully was way above my pay grade in terms of trying to navigate or fix. That's not my job. Even though we have to recognize and navigate that within the process of what we do, it really reflected. And I found both of them in those moments really seeming resentful of the dog because of, you know, that perceived sort of highlighting of their inability to communicate with one another.
I think that's well said, and something we've experienced. Again, to your point, I think probably a little bit less common than some of the others, maybe, but absolutely there. One other one that we haven't touched on yet, and you know, but I think is worth mentioning for people, is I think also we've talked about behavior issues that feel more, I guess, sort of scary or serious, you know, aggression, separation anxiety, things like that. I think one of the other ones where I truly have seen someone that attachment or that bond really suffer is with an issue that might be more likely to bring up just sort of feelings of disgust. So like if a dog is really really challenged with house training issues, mm-hmm. if they're marking all over the house, if they're peeing in the bed, if they're like defecating in places, and it's just they're like really, the owner is really having a hard time with that. I have seen cases there where over time it makes it hard for them to maintain that, like, you know, those warm feelings toward their dog, because they're just they're feeling like it's gross, truthfully, a lot of the time. And I don't know, it's like,
is a little gross,
feels funny to talk about, but it is. And you could see why that would impact a relationship.
Well, I mean, with Mo, our American Bulldog, I mean, he was one of the most challenging house cases we've ever dealt with.
And he was 90 pounds and a year and a half old. So like,
those are big poops.
Ew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ew.
Yes. And it was much easier to like really build a relationship with him after that. I felt like,
yes.
You know, it's not like I'm just bringing that up because I agree with you, because that can be sort of on the day to day. It's really gross.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that one comes back to like, that's an easy one where we sort of had to go into that mode where, Lauren, you mentioned initially, it's not that we didn't care about making sure his needs were met and being responsible pet owners and like doing what he needed to have a happy life. But there was a period, I will be very honest, where it was like, you're kind of gross, dude. Like, I don't like you that much, but I'm committed to like, there's things I like about you, right? But like, I don't like that part. Mm-hmm. And it was an issue to work through, and we did. But I think that underlines that sort of like getting into solutions mode. But like, sometimes it can take some time. It's okay to have those feelings, especially if you're maintaining that role as a sort of a keeper and a caregiver and saying, no matter what, it's my responsibility right now to still make sure your needs are met and make sure you're comfortable.
And we knew it wasn't his fault.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the other thing. It's not like we were blaming him. It's just, it just sucked.
Yeah.
Like cleaning up giant poops every day, you know, in random corners in the apartment.
And like the leg lift to pee outside the crate, like the fire hose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
on a personal note, but Mosey's got house trained. It took a little extra time and love, but he made it through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I think we probably covered most of them. Does anyone else have anything else that comes to mind that feels important?
I think the only thing, I don't have any other reasons why, but I suspect somebody listening to this may have a different perspective that may be unique to them. And they're like, well, my situation's different, so I guess this episode doesn't apply to me. It's like, oh, no. No. Right. However you land in that moment of being like, yep, don't like you so much right now, that's cool. We can normalize that, even if it's different than the ones we're talking about. I think it happens for a lot of different reasons. And you may not even know, right? You may not even know why you don't like this particular animal. And, you know, that's okay too. We can look at some solutions and figure it out.
Yeah. And it can change day to day. I think that's the other thing too. It's like, you can have days where it's like, everything feels good. And then there can be days where it's like really frustrating and that. So like even, so to your point, Chris, with this conversation, I think even that, if it's just sort of, that can change day to day or week to week and those types of things. And that can be normal too.
Yeah. Don't feel like we just gave you like an official checklist of valid reasons to feel this way. Yes. I'm glad you clarified that. Okay, good. So, but I'm sure some of what we talked about resonated with people and they heard themselves within some of those descriptions, and that is okay. Again, I think now if we want to move into like, hey, if you find yourself in this situation, right, it's okay. Don't panic. You know, you're not alone. You're not the only one who has ever felt this way with a dog. What can people do about it? I know it's going to vary a little bit based on the reasons why, right? Just like with dogs, when we're working on behavior issues and things like that, we always want to say like, why are you feeling this way? And that's going to influence what the path forward looks like. But, you know, either broadly or for specific types of scenarios, what are some things that come to mind in terms of like positive ways that folks can move forward and build a better relationship with a dog who they don't currently like that much?
So I think maybe first finding maybe other people who you can just vent to about it and talk and have it normalized. I mean, I'm thinking about like the mom chats and when someone, you know, for the first time is like, I mean, I love my baby, but I'm really mad at them because they don't let me sleep. And they're so afraid to say it out loud, right? And you're like, no, 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 that's totally normal. It's okay. You're not a bad person. And I think like, it's okay to just say, I have these feelings that aren't like butterflies and sunshine about my dog. And to have someone say, I went through that. And here's how I came to the other side, right? Mm-hmm. So we might not have that, you know, specific example. We might, hopefully, but for all the people out there, you know, I think finding that camaraderie with someone who's going through it currently, but maybe someone who has been through that and they can help navigate and just be a sounding board, because sometimes you don't feel comfortable saying those things out loud to everybody, right? You're like not posting on social media, like, here's my dog, I don't like him. And so, you know, finding a pal who understands.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. And it's not one I would have immediately thought of, but it makes a ton of sense. Just being able to sort of verbalize some of those feelings can almost make you then start to think about them more objectively because they're not just churning around in your head. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's honestly why, like, even for us, like why we started having like a support group, like a group online for owners. We have, you know, 750 owners in a group that share stuff with each other and can find that support, because it can be pretty isolating and it's not necessarily your family or friends or, you know, people on your Facebook page or whatever that's necessarily going to hear you. So whether it's there or other online communities, because it's not, you know, they exist out there, but I would wholeheartedly agree. But I think that like having a place where you can vent and have people who can understand you, maybe have gone through it and share advice with you, I think is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you raised that one. What else comes to mind?
I was going to say, it's kind of piggybacking on that in a way, but that idea of kind of finding a team in a way, like depending on what the behavior issues or what you're dealing with looks like in reality. But I think sometimes it's also giving yourself that permission to go, you know what, I don't actually need the dog to be in daycare today, or I don't need a dog walker to come today, but I'm going to have somebody do that because I just need to take a step back, or I just need a break, or I just need to kind of like be able to take a breath. And it's almost like that like sort of self-care piece of the puzzle where making it okay to go, you know, I can sort of share some of this with a professional or a trainer or someone who can help me not feel like I have to do it all 24 hours a day, that it's okay to give the dog a chew and put them in a crate. It's okay to give them a doggy daycare day so that you can kind of take a breath and take a nap or whatever that needs to happen, that sometimes that thing, you don't have to go all the time, that you can just go, you know what, he's going to daycare today and I'm going to, you know, do some yoga or whatever that looks like.
Yes.
That's always a piece of it really, you have to remember.
Yeah. I really like that, Lauren. I think it's what's sort of baked into that as well is, you know, giving yourself permission to get a little space from that relationship. And don't feel like you have to force this positive outcome on some, you know, like self-imposed timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really, really well said and really important.
I think something else that comes to mind in that kind of taps a little bit into both of those ideas is also getting a fresh set of eyes, right? So I think about sort of, you know, kind of the venting piece of releasing some of the pressure that's in that relationship, or, you know, offloading some of those tasks that allow for space, and even asking a question of someone, whether it's someone, you know, it could be the same individuals that are fulfilling both of those roles that were just mentioned, but someone who can basically say, hey, you know what, I don't really like my dog that much. Can you put a fresh set of eyes on this? Like, what am I missing? You know, and I remember having a conversation with a client, this was years ago, and I had made a comment, something about, oh, I love how your dog is like really into stuff. Like it's really curious. And the owner was like, really? Could you just take him for a while? Because it's driving me freaking crazy, the fact that this dog won't settle. But that's interesting that that's the same thing that you actually really kind of liked about my dog, huh? And so getting a fresh set of eyes, and whether that's just in conversation or whether it's enlisting the help of a professional, who can then say, hey, here are some things that might be helpful, knowing that not every solution is going to be appropriate. And if you're going through this on your own, gosh, would it be helpful to have someone who potentially has navigated this 10 times or 30 times or 100 times to be able to draw from that toolbox of potential solutions, so you're not feeling like you're having to come up with all of those solutions on your own? You know, we got people who can do that. So if that's an option for you, enlisting a bit of additional resources could be helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to add too, I think, you know, we talked about that heart dog earlier, and that for me was Sammy, and he was like our first dog as we did this. And there's not a day that goes by I don't think about that dog, like every, like all the time. And, you know, and sometimes I think about, and I love obviously all of our current dogs, but sometimes I think like where my current dog sort of missed out a little bit is like with Sammy, I did a lot of cooperative type training with him. So like through like rally obedience and nose work, or, you know, if it's lure coursing, or like there's a million activities out there that can be suitable for different dogs. And I know not everyone wants to do dog sports or can do dog sports or any of those things. And I'm not like a huge dog sports person, but I do think that, for me with Sammy, I think engaging in an activity where we were both cooperatively working towards some goal that we both enjoyed, that when I think back to our relationship, because I do ask myself sometimes, like, why was that relationship so special? Mm-hmm. And Sammy was pretty special. Like I, you know, but at the same time, I do think my activities with him were different than they are with my current dogs. And so I do think that it's an opportunity. And again, it could be scent work, or it could be lure coursing, or it could be rally obedience or agility. There's dock diving, could be trick training at home. Like there's mm-hmm. all kinds of cool things. And it's not about like getting ribbons or doing all these things. You not, maybe never even have to go to a competition, but I do feel like that has helped, that has helped me with him, I think, a lot. And I have seen it help clients with their dogs quite often, mm-hmm. where if they actually engage in an activity together, yep. the relationship can really blossom. So I did want to throw that out there as like one of the big ones I've seen that really can build like a special connection.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a huge one. And I can't speak from the dog side of things if that builds a relationship more. I mean, I think it probably does. But, you know, in terms of a straight up enjoyment level, I don't know if there's a difference between a dog spending 15 minutes doing like rally skills with their owner versus getting to go like sniff around the yard. But I do think from the human side of things, that activity together is really valuable in terms of strengthening a bond. And I'm not saying to do one versus the other, just to do both if you can. But I think I would agree that those activities together from sort of a bond building or strengthening perspective or repairing mm-hmm. perspective, that can go a really long way.
Yeah. And just to add one other thing on that, like, I think that was so impactful for me. Like one of the, like, I tried to do rally obedience with our current dogs, and it hurt too much. Mm. Like thinking so, like, and I know there's been, I've talked to other owners where that was similar too. Mm. So I'm mostly just putting that out there in case there's other people who sort of feel like that. But yeah, just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. No, I think that's a huge one. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. I love those shares and kind of the personal nature of how this. You know, we were kind of talking about like I don't like my dog, and yet some of that could be even be coming from a place of, you know, these relationships are so incredibly meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I'm reminded of a conversation I had with colleagues where we were talking about sort of what is trust within a relationship, and the ability to sort of predict the way in which an individual is going to respond, even in the future, the ability to depend on them and to understand what that give and take is likely to look like based on the outcome of previous experiences is where a lot of that trust comes into play. And so if you're kind of living alongside of a dog, but not really engaging with them, it's actually really hard to develop trust until you get into something that feels a bit more cooperative or a bit more give and take. And so, you know, whether that's rally or even if it's a matter of, you know, I think I'm thinking of cases where, you know, kind of the immediate actionable item that we provided to a client was, you know, make a list, go through the next 24 hours. And anytime your dog puts a smile on your face, just jot it down. It could be something as silly as the way they give a big shake off. Cool. It could be something like, wow, when their nose really gets going on a walk, that's cool. I wonder what his world's all about. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, but are there ways to shift from sort of dwelling on the frustration or the difficult parts, which is so consuming for all of us when we're navigating conflict or stress? Can we start to celebrate some of those moments where we can start to build a connection? And I don't mean force it, but just acknowledge what is. And does that help with understanding? Does it help with trust? Does it actually start to generate something that feels more like a relationship over time? Mm-hmm. I wonder if that could be helpful.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think part of that as well is just like, how important is so hard, it's almost impossible, but how important it is to try not to compare.
Yeah.
Right? Like how important it is to just try to accept that this is a different individual. They are their own being. They're wholly unique, and just take the time to get to know them without the pressure. Like, get rid of the expectations that you're going to have any type of relationship or bond in particular.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just get to know them. Get to know what they like. And there's probably going to be quite a few things that end up on that list, because dogs are just really good at like winning us over, that end up being like, to your point, Dr. Paco, like, I love how he like lifts his nose and air and like scents into the air and looks so peaceful and like blissed out when he does it. Or I love the way she like murders her stuffy toys or whatever it might be. So that sort of don't compare and remove the expectations for the relationship, I think, is part of the path forward, because you might get to a place of neutral before you ever get to positive.
Right.
And that's okay. And that can make it happen faster than just saying like, how do I elicit warm, squishy feelings toward my dog?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's what is that saying? Your dog is not giving you a hard time. He's having a hard time. But sometimes just changing that perspective, and then that sort of builds a little bit of potentially empathy for the situation. It can also sometimes help shift some things.
Mm-hmm. I love that one, Ayala. I think I had a note about that, about sort of if you, especially if it's behavior related, like if it's tied to certain behavior issues, getting in that mindset of like, how do I help my dog through this? Because to your point, they are having a hard time, even if you're having a hard time too. And it is truthfully because of their behavior. They're not doing it intentionally to give you a hard time, you know? And it's really getting into that mindset of how do I help? Because I think there's even lots of research from a human perspective that when we get in the mindset of helping someone else, being the helper does a better job at facilitating positive feelings toward the other party and building a bond than being the person who's helped. Right? Like you're more likely to feel favorably towards someone that you do a favor for versus towards someone who does a favor for you, which I just find interesting. And I think that probably holds true with our relationships with dogs as well. Mm-hmm. So if we can get into that mindset of like, how do I help you? Then that's probably a great way to move things in a positive direction.
I love the helping angle of that, Sarah, too, especially since, you know, when we're in that conflict, when we're in the mud of whatever that relationship is, you know, it's so easy to get into sort of the blaming, judgment, finger pointing piece. But at the end of the day, I would argue that in the vast majority of circumstances, our pet owners have the responsibility to say, if I want this to look different, it kind of has to be on me. If I just sort of sit back and wait for my dog to be perfect and, you know, and to do something that I'm ready to love them for, dang, that's going to be a really long road. Like, we have an opportunity to be able to move that forward. And I'm not saying an obligation. You could make the decision to say, no, this just isn't for me. We're just too far apart. I have needs, you have needs, and there's a Grand Canyon in between. Mm-hmm. Cool. We can acknowledge that. But if we want it to be better, the responsibility to take those steps really, I think, in most cases, is really on us more than on the dog. And so acknowledging that, you know, what's actionable? It doesn't have to be big, broad, sweeping gestures, and we don't have to fake it. We don't have to say, gosh, I'm going to love you until I like you. But they're probably going to see through that one a little bit. and we're not going to probably fake it that well. But we can do stuff, right? We can observe. We can be curious. We can be heard. and we can find that point of empathy and start to build something that is unique and whole for that relationship.
Yeah, I agree. So we've talked about lots of ways to either build a bond or maybe strengthen or repair a bond. You know, when might someone want to think about, like, hey, considering something like rehoming is actually potentially the kindest option here for the best option for my dog? And I know that's a huge question, you know, but I do think that's probably for some people listening, depending on the level of, I don't even want to say dislike, because there's usually other factors at play. If someone's at that point, it's more than just a simple, like, I don't really like you that much. I think there's usually other factors playing into it. But, you know, I don't want someone listening to this to hear like, well, no matter what, I just have to stick it out and do some activities and wait for it to hopefully get better, mm-hmm. you know? So
even though, like, vast majority of the time,
oh my goodness,
that is going to be the case, just yes. to be clear. But if you're in that small minority.
Yes. But yes, I would say if you're able to sort of drop the expectations, give it some time, engage in activities, get curious and get into that sort of helper mindset, I'm going to say that a huge majority of the time, if it really is a situation where you're just not, you don't mesh super well with your dog, that's going to change. Like, that bond is going to develop and improve. For the cases where that's not so, you know, how would someone know that? Or, like, you know, what might be some indicators there, I guess, that something like rehoming might be an option to consider?
I would say that the strategy that I use more often than anything else in my practice, and again, this is not just forward to that path of rehoming, but even sort of acknowledging, where are we at? Like, how big of a concern is this? It seems like something that we need to unpack at least a little bit. Sometimes I'll do an exercise where I'll ask my client to basically say, okay, forget about this dog. You've never met this dog. They don't exist. Tell me what, as best you can, what are your ideal characteristics of that dog? And be specific. It could be color. It could be size. It could be coat type. It could be activities. It could be they sleep in late. It could be, you know, anything at all. Just let's make your perfect dog based on whatever criteria are important to you. Again, forget about your dog for just a second. And let's take that and sort of put that list over in a box. And now kind of wipe the slate clean. If we could put ourselves in the perspective of your dog, again, forget about you. This isn't about you now, this next step. If I could just ask your dog to make the same list, your dog is creating their ideal world. Who is my person? Do they have kids? Do they like squeaky toys? Do we stay up late versus getting up late? Are we going out on the weekends? Do we live next to the ocean? Do we have trees in the yard? Are we on a high rise? Like, where are we? What do we do? What does that look like based on what we think we know? Again, forget about you. It's not about you in this moment. This is just about your dog and their wants and needs. And then if we've done that as objectively as we can, and sometimes that's kind of an exercise that we work through within consult if they need a little bit of extra help. And then we sort of take a look at those lists, not to try to say, how do we mash them together, but to say, okay, which aspects of your dog, their list, do we think are sort of wants versus needs? And how flexible do we think that list is going to be versus your list? And if you are someone who says, no, my, you know, the way that I maintain literally my mental health is by dog parking with my dog 7 days a week. And if that is a non-negotiable for you on your list, and you've got a dog who can't do that, then we've got a bit of an impasse that we have to at the very least acknowledge. Maybe there's a way forward. Maybe in some cases you get a second dog who can be your dog park dog and you allow your first dog to stay home, right? All sorts of solutions. It doesn't automatically mean that you have to rehome. But in trying to figure out where that relationship really exists and what's movable and what's flexible, I find that the two list strategy and then sort of sitting back and looking at both of those lists, not from the perspective of the owner and not from the perspective of the dog, but truly as a third party and saying, cool, what's flexible here often brings a level of clarity that I don't think previously existed. And often the solutions or the next step forwards kind of start to reveal themselves a little bit mm-hmm. more than they did when we were in it, fighting mm-hmm. against whatever that source of conflict happened to be.
Oh, I really love that.
I absolutely love that. I love the fact that it acknowledges, yeah, that there's two sets of needs there without judgment. You know, like there are two sets of wants and needs there, and we're not trying to jam one into the other, or saying one's more important than the other. There just are. There just are two sets of wants and needs. And how do we evaluate those and look at it? And I would argue that that's probably even an exercise. And I think you're saying this, Dr. Popple, as well. It's because this isn't only about going down a should we rehome a dog path. This can also be really helpful in a relationship, from a relationship building standpoint, to really step back and think about, like, hey, what are my dog's needs and wants? You know, think about them from a little bit more of a, like, a step back versus being in the weeds. I absolutely love that. I think that's a great exercise for people to go through that lets them acknowledge both individuals involved in the relationship. I have nothing else to add.
That was amazing. That was so amazing. Like, literally, like, what? This is, I mean, whatever, we're not doing comparison of ideas, but
well, we are. We are judging. We are scoring.
But
Dr. Pockle just took the lead with that one.
That's so. I'm out. Sometimes I also think that you see if distance makes the heart grow fonder, or do you actually feel a lot better if your dog can board in a, you know, boarding facility with a friend, whatever, and you put them in that other environment for a week or two, you know, enough time to give you time to miss them, and do you miss them? And what do you notice about your day-to-day life, about your family, and how, what, all the things? And then when it's time to pick them up, is there like, oh, okay. Or is there, oh my gosh, I forgot how much I love the way that he wakes me up in the morning, you know, with snuggles or whatever. So I think that can also be helpful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely.
I was just going to,
again, kind of getting you out of the weeds. Sorry, Lauren, go ahead.
That's okay. No, I was going to add in there that the other thing that I often will ask, especially when we have situations where the dog's behavior is potentially a safety concern, or is it's just really difficult to manage, or whatever that looks like. But I always like to ask the question about, you know, where is everyone in the home with working on this? Because we, at Instinct, we tend to work, as you all know, with dogs who have kind of some bigger feelings and bigger issues. And so sometimes the question has to be, you know, listen, there's a way we can continue to work with this dog and help his behavior, you know, conform more to your needs and vice versa. But if everyone in the home is not on board with doing that, the way forward is much more difficult. And we have to sometimes acknowledge that there might be people in the home who not only maybe don't care for the dog, but might genuinely be afraid, or just might, you know, I've had situations with children in the home where something's happened where now the child's genuinely afraid and doesn't want to engage with the dog. And so while there might be ways to build relationship and to work through behavior, does everyone want to? Because we all know in most of those cases, if everyone's not on board, it's ultimately not going to work, or it's going to create more safety risk if everyone's not on board with putting in what's usually considerable effort to work through an issue or to build relationship or to build, you know, bond with a dog. And so when you have a family unit, whether it's adults or adults and children, everybody's got to want to, or resentment will just build. So sometimes that's a question I will ask is, does everybody still have the emotional bandwidth to keep going? And if not, then there's a conversation that the family needs to have together about what next.
I'm really glad you brought that up, Lauren, because I think up until this point in the conversation, we've largely been, I think, speaking to or having a conversation directed towards folks who personally are in a situation where they may not like their dog that much at this point in time. I think that highlights a situation for anyone listening who maybe is like, I really like my dog, but my partner doesn't, or but my child doesn't. And I think that it will be helpful for them to hear the whole conversation, but just sort of have that circle back to how important it is for the feelings that other individual has are just as real and valid and important as how much you care about your dog. So it's really important to be able to have like an open conversation about what that looks like and what that means.
Yeah. I think the other thing too, just to add there, with rehoming, and it's not to downplay how serious of a decision that is, both for the family and also for the dog, because like they have to change environments and there's a lot of things wrapped up in there. I will say the rehoming cases that I've seen where I got to see the dog on both sides, and there's been many where someone had to make the really hard choice, and all of these owners, when they made that choice, it was excruciating for them. Like, and I think, especially for people listening who've never been in that position, like you're lucky. Like that's a really tough situation to be in. And I've had the privilege of seeing a dog on both ends before the rehoming and after the rehoming. And I don't think I can think of one case out of that where the dog wasn't doing much better after the rehoming.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, especially if that decision-making process is coming back to that list of needs and wants.
Yeah.
And you're checking off, like, can we actually check off way more boxes on that dog's needs and wants list in a different home? And again, not to downplay the seriousness of that decision and the impact of that decision.
No, not at all. That's not a first go-to. Yeah.
But yes, if that's a scenario where you look at those lists and you really are saying, we can do more in a different home and have a better outcome, that might be a path worth considering.
Yeah.
But again, that's not the norm. No. That's not like, hey, this is the regular go-to if you're just having a bad day with your dog or if you're struggling. You know, there's so many ways to make things so, so much better. But if you've considered rehoming or if you've done it before, there is zero shame or judgment in doing that. It's often a very courageous and kind decision, because you're often also met with a lot of flack mm-hmm. from people.
Yeah.
And most of the time, again, from our experience of who we're working with, people are making that choice. It's their own needs are involved, but I would say even more heavily weighted is the ability to meet the needs of the dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
That weighs into that decision.
Yeah. And knowing that rehoming is not always an option either.
Yeah.
Right. That's.
Yep.
But.
Yeah, definitely. But I know we ended on a little bit of a more serious note, but I think it also is, you know, it's part of this conversation. You know, we wouldn't be doing the episode justice if we didn't talk about it. But I think that's all I had in terms of questions.
Any or parting
topics to go through? Any parting thoughts from folks?
Or shots?
I don't have any major comments here going back. I just think I'm really just reflecting back on some of the ideas that were shared within this, and this is now sort of my, I'm honored to sort of do this alongside all of you. And it's such a reminder to me of all of the incredible professionals and voices that we have within this industry. And for pet owners who are listening to this, gosh, there are so many people who can be a source of help and support. And whether it's a team member at Instinct or whether it's another team member in your community, we can do so much more together through collaboration around mm-hmm. this issue, as well as so many different things that we may navigate in the process of pet ownership, that, you know, if you're finding yourself struggling and feeling like you don't have a team, there are options. And whether that's something that's more of a Facebook group, you know, coming back to some of those solutions that we talked about already, it just is such a reminder for me of the value in collaboration and just the benefits of that for pet mm-hmm. owners who are struggling.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that crystallizes for me as well. I think if you're reaching out for help because you find you're in a situation where you're struggling with the behavior or whatnot, what it might be, what's actually really helpful for us as professionals is if you raise as a primary concern or goal, I'm struggling with my relationship with my dog. Because sometimes if that's hidden underneath and you present a lot of the behavior issues that you want to work on, we can go into solutions mode and help you with those issues. But there's also things we can do directly targeted at helping you build a relationship with your dog that if we know that's top of mind, let's do it. Like, let's dive right in and do that. So don't be shy about saying that, because it's not uncommon.
No.
If you raise that an issue, we'll be so, I get so happy when someone says like they want to work on their relationship with their dog, because that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah,
to keep that in mind.
Well said.
Well, this was so much fun. Thank you all again for being willing to have this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I think that's it for now. So we'll see you next time.